In the studio, I've got Stephanie Philp. Good morning.
Good morning, Aaron. Good morning, listeners.
How are you doing?
Doing really well, thank you.
Stephanie's just got into her first coffee of the day, so she's just like getting up.
Very mellow.
Getting up. Yeah. That'll change as the interview wears on a little bit. You get more hyped. I don't know. Hyper is not a phrase we
would use. If I had four before breakfast, I'd probably be hyped. Nobody wants that. Nobody wants to see that.
You wouldn't be able to sit down. So, Stephanie is you're like a coach. You're a life coach. What do you, if you have to describe yourself in one phrase, life coach? One word. You can have a hyphenated word.
I'll help people get unstuck. So I'm a trainer. I train people to work with other people and work and change their own mind. And I coach people and I write.
Okay. There we go. So, and today's topic, Stephanie's chosen, is conflict. And we were just reflecting off the air right now that, we really aren't very good at resolving that. We don't like it. People who come from overseas come here and say, New Zealanders, you don't cope with conflict very well. You just run away and hide or blow up.
Yeah, and
we could maybe do with something in between, an option, a third option.
Yeah, I think it's interesting because I remember when I first came to New Zealand, many hundreds of years ago, at the time there was a lot of immigrants from Holland and England and I think that they were all trying to solve conflict in their own ways.
By leaving their homes?
Well, no, when they were in New Zealand. So if was a problem, they'd try and solve it in the ways that they learned how to do it. So, for example, this is a generalisation. The Dutch are very much kind of upfront and speak the minds. You know? So often that was interpreted as being blunt.
Yeah.
The English would do it in a different way and might get the unions involved or something and try and get it resolved that way.
Yeah.
And the Kiwis would really not know how to deal with it. And so these other foreign nationals would be labelled as, whinging poms or blunt Dutch people or whatever it was, So it didn't matter where they were from. Everybody is grown up in a different culture and learn or don't learn how to deal with conflict well. So I think a lot of people have a negative connotation to the word conflict to start off with, and we've talked about this before, that when I've worked with people, and often I work with people who do have an issue with conflict, they feel like personally attacked sometimes, or they feel frozen, depending on the level of conflict. They just don't know how to resolve it. And so when they think about the word, when you say the word conflict, that then they have images in their mind that aren't very useful for resolving it in the first place. Like one guy said, when you think about conflict, what comes to mind? And he put his fists up and went, like he was going to have a boxing match with somebody.
You triggered him just by mentioning the word.
And he said, that's what I think. He said, I see somebody with the fists up, And I went, oh, okay, that's interesting. So, from there, having that as the first thing that comes to your mind when you think about the word conflict, that's not a very sort of good place to start from to kind of resolve it. Because
I'm thinking that like the image in my mind, not so much an image, but is that there's things build up and there's an explosion, but there's no, that's it.
Yeah.
It just goes from bad to worse to extreme.
Right.
And that's all you get.
Yeah.
No sense of resolution in, to be honest, in my head, when you talk about conflict, but maybe there should be.
Yeah,
conflict is a stage.
That's right, and I think it'd be interesting as we're talking, for people that are listening to think about what image do they conjure up with the word conflict. Because for me, it wasn't like this always, but for now, when I think of the word conflict, I think a way to resolve a problem.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because often out of conflict, all kinds of innovations can come. If we don't have any conflict, it's kind of that conflict that creates the change. It could be a change in perspective. It could be a change in how we do things. It could be a new innovation that comes out of it. But without that conflict, that doesn't happen. So conflict never worries me. If people say, there's conflict resolution, I kind of rub my hands together with with glee.
Well, conflict resolution, that's a good pairing of words. That's
but the other thing is, with what you're saying, is that's exactly right, because I know in my marriage we used to have conflicts, as every marriage does at some point, and it would never get resolved. And can we have a talk about this? And he'd always say, oh, I'll talk about it when I'm ready. But the problem was, he was never ready, and I keep saying, can we resolve this? And then it just kind of gets swept under the carpet, and then the next time something happened, all this other stuff would come out from under the carpet and be dragged out again because it was never resolved. And when I've worked with a lot of couples with the same issues, and it's not one partner or another that's at fault. It's like, how do they get it resolved in a way that they can both win? Because often the other connotation with conflict is somebody's got to win and somebody's got to lose.
Yeah.
And nobody wants to be losing. Everybody wants to win.
But also, are you saying that you don't have to figure out who to blame? You can just go to the resolution phase?
Yeah.
Without worrying about that?
Well,
I say that slightly jokingly, because
it's interesting.
We're so
I remember one
on
couple
that.
I saw, and the woman, I can't even remember what the conflict was, but it had been going on for like 5 years. And every time they had an argument, this thing would get brought up again, whatever it was. I can't remember now. That's a long time ago.
This one thing.
Oh, would get, and so the husband would go, oh, you know, here we go again. Every time we have an argument, this gets brought up every single time. Every single time she brings this same thing up again. And I went, okay, well, if it's been brought up, then there's a reason for it. So let's explore what that reason is. So I said to the woman, I says, what is it that you need to know that would stop this from occurring, that would stop you from bringing it up whenever there was another conflict? And she said, I just want him to apologise. And that was it. He never apologised. And he said, but I thought I had apologised. She says, no, you've never apologised. And so he genuinely apologised, and that was it. That was like, it was so simple. But because he hadn't apologised, she thought that he'd never done anything wrong and he wasn't admitting to it. And that was, and so he just kept being brought up and added to whatever the latest thing was, you know.
So that's obviously, they didn't have very good conflict resolution skills, but then most of us don't. Like, I don't want anyone to think, oh, look at those people, because that's throughout our culture, that's what we're like. And we were talking just before about the way that, like, conflict resolution skills we learn from when we're children is that, certainly my experience was our parents would say, this is how it's going to be. That if there was a conflict between the child and the parent would use their power to resolve the conflict.
Yeah.
And then we'd go, I remember the first year I went flatting, the first couple of flats, the way we all tried to resolve conflict in the flat that same way by imposing our will over the other people. But we were all equal. We were like, my first flight, we're five equal people. And so there's no chance of reason. Yeah, well, yeah, just nothing productive can come out of it. None of us had the skill. There was no adult in the room.
Yeah.
Not that an adult, we wouldn't need a counsellor, not just an adult, but you know what I mean.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, it was just, and I was in the student hostel, and then the year after that, all the flats that formed out of the hostel, almost all of them dissolved into acrimony by the end of the year.
Right, yeah.
A bunch of supposedly highly intelligent young people. Disaster.
Mm. Mm.
Yeah.
And again, it's like, where do you learn conflict? Where do you learn conflict, but where do you learn conflict resolution? How do you learn to resolve it? And often it's not at home, because, you know, like you say, your parents have got the power, and unless they realise that they have the power and that it's important for you to learn how to actually resolve conflict, which a lot of parents don't, then all you're learning is what they did.
Yeah, and it only works if you've got power.
Yeah, exactly. And so I learned to sulk.
You learned to sulk.
Because that's what Mum did. She'd sulk, you know, if Mum and Dad had an argument, Mum would sulk for 3 months, you know.
3 months. That's an A-grade sulking right
there.
I know,
there. Exactly. It was amazing. And so that's what I learned, because I hadn't learned how to resolve conflict. So I had to learn as an adult how to do this, and it took a few years, because I didn't realise it was a problem. I just carried on doing what I was doing, so that would either be sulking and then saying, can we have a talk about it, and then when we had it, well, we didn't have a talk about it, so it just kind of built up and built up until there was another explosion, and then every time it was like a volcano that got bigger and bigger because all these other things were underneath it were also unresolved.
Yeah.
So people, when people say, oh, we never have conflict, I don't believe them. I think there's conflict there. They're just not, they're ignoring it, and it's going to explode at some point, you know?
You hide the conflict.
Yeah. And I think, you know, most of us are good at communicating when things are going fine. But if something happens that we're not happy about, we don't know how to kind of bring it up to talk about it without feeling awkward or that the other person's going to get angry or, you know, we kind of mind read what the other person might do if we bring up whatever the thing is that we're concerned about, you know. And, you know, I mentioned this before as well. When I was in human resource management, I'd be interviewing people. And I, you know, the inevitable question, what are your strengths, what are your skills? And they'd all put say the same thing, and I'd write it as G-O-W-W-P. Do you know what that stands for? Because it was like I couldn't be bothered writing out the whole sentence because everybody said the same thing. It stands for gets on well with people.
Oh, yeah.
So that I'd say, what are your strengths? Oh, I get on really well with people, or I get on well with people. So I'd just write G-O-W-W, oh, here we go again, you know.
Everybody says that.
Yeah, and then they'd be in the job for 3 months, and then they'd be, you know, some almighty fight in whatever department they were in. Didn't matter who it was, because they all thought they got on well with people. And then they didn't know how to resolve it, because they'd just have a shouting match, or sometimes a fight.
Yeah.
You know,
a fight.
Yeah, sometimes it'd be a fight. Yeah,
in an office.
Yeah. No, not in the office, but in the electrical department the lineman or something, you know, or out on the job, and the foreman would come in and say, "You've got to do something about this. I have to do something about it." You know.
It was more passive aggressive in the office.
Rather than aggressive. And see, that's another example of conflict is that passive aggressiveness is people not dealing with it. So, you know, so then how do you deal with it? I think, first of all, we have to think about it in a different way, because if we have images of fist fights and arguments and screaming and shouting matches and things like that, then that's not a good – that puts us in a – because the pictures we make in our head affect our body. So, you know, your mind can't tell the difference between something that you vividly imagine and something that's real. So if you imagine – you know, being chased by a tiger, for example, your body will react as if you're being chased by a tiger. If you imagine
it well enough.
Well, you'd be surprised.
Yeah, okay.
If you imagine, you know, a fist fight as a result of a conflict, or you imagine, you know, people shouting and screaming at each other, and that's your interpretation of a conflict, then, you know, the idea of resolving it, you're already unresourceful because your body's gone into this fight, flight, or freeze thing because of the way you're thinking about the word.
And your frontal lobe's gone offline at that point, hasn't it? That's your rational thinking part of your brain. Yeah.
And so the other thing then is that we don't listen. So when there's a conflict, everybody's talking at the same time and nobody's listening except to themselves. And so that's the first key. So, you know, I've done quite a few mediations in organisations where people have sometimes it's two people that are in conflict, but often those two people enrol other people on their side and it becomes, you know, half the organisation versus the other
They build an army,
yeah.
Yeah.
And it can start from something like really simple. So maybe one person doesn't like another person that's in the office, as an example, right? But they, you know, they tolerate each other. They're there to do a professional job. And then one day one sends an email to the other. Because the first person doesn't like the other one, they read it as if it's aggressive because they don't like the other person. So they're reading it
They're looking for the signs of aggression, not noticing the signs of peace. Yeah.
And then they reply with the same level of aggression. First person's like, "What? Where did all this come from?" You know, and then they reply like, and often they only work like 10 meters away from each other. They could get up and actually talk to each other, but they don't. We end up with email wars then, you know.
Yeah.
And then they involve other people, or somebody will say, oh, you know, this person's bullying me.
It seems to be very easy to draw other people into conflicts like that.
Yeah, well, especially if you talk about somebody and say, oh, you know, have you noticed this? Have you noticed that? And, you know, this person did this to me yesterday, and, you know, and then the other person starts to believe it as well, and then you end up with, say, two groups, or sometimes more. You know, I always say to people, if you like, I'm pedantic with emails. I'll write an email and then I'll read it, and I'll try and imagine that I'm the other person, and what's it going to be like when I get, even if it's just any email, really, it doesn't have to be.
Yeah,
because I don't want people to get the wrong idea. And sometimes you can't. Well, you can talk to them, but sometimes you can't see them face to face because they might be on the other side of the world or something. You know, so. I would say, you know, write the email and then just check it and see how, especially if it's maybe a little bit something, you know, you might think it might be possibly taken out of context or something, then rewrite it. Or better still, ring the person up and get it resolved that way. Or if possible, even better, go and see them.
Right.
You know, because then you can see, if you're face-to-face, you can see the body language, you can hear the words. Whereas if you're reading an email, you read the email as if you don't like the person. You know? So it might just say, how are you today? Hope you had a nice weekend. Can we get together and talk about this, I don't know, this thing that happened on Friday? Okay? And so the other person's reading it like, hope you had a nice weekend. You know, and it's like they put in the intonation. They put in the intonation on it they're reading the email because I don't like the person.
What does she mean by that?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You see what I mean?
Yeah. We know. We all know. Yeah.
And so then they respond the way that they're interpreting the email.
And then what happens is it's actually a self-fulfilling belief. If you believe that someone hates you and you interpret everything that they do as that, then you give all this aggression back and then they will come to hate you.
Yeah.
Like you actually made it happen.
Exactly.
Because of your belief.
Yeah. And we talked about beliefs before and how that creates your reality, you know?
And so
then, you know, like how do you resolve these things? So I think the first thing is, You've got to try and have an open mind, and listening is key, and not listening to reinforce what you already think, but listening with the intention of understanding, which is a big difference there. So listening with, okay, what is this person really saying? And I always get people, I teach them reflective listening. So that's saying back to the person what they've said, using as many of their words as you can. So what a lot of people have been taught is, I forgot what it's called now.
Not reflective listening.
Well, it's when you say back to them what you think, what you think they've said. Anyway.
It sounds like reflective listening.
No, because that's you're saying to them what they have said, not what you think they've said.
Oh, okay. Oh, yeah. So it's just like, so I think what you're saying is, or are you saying this?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so I'll give you an example, actually. A few weeks ago, I was on a Zoom call for a course that I'm doing, and the woman that I was talking to was in Australia. She was really lovely. And anyway, she said, oh, how do you do that? And I said, oh, this, that, and the other. And every time I was paraphrasing the words I'm looking for. Every time I'd say something, she'd paraphrase it, and I'd go, oh, and I'd have to think, is that what I said, or is that what I meant? And usually it wasn't, and I'd go, no, that's not what I meant. And I'd say it again, and then she'd paraphrase it again, and it'd come back to me using completely different words, and again I'd be like, is that what I said? And I go, and in the end I said, I'm going to have to stop you. I said, because whenever you paraphrase what I'm saying, I said, I'm having to stop and check that what you're saying is what I said, and it's not. And she's, oh, I'm a teacher, and that's what I learned how to do.
Now, so they sort of learnt the process, but not quite.
She learnt it. She was really good at paraphrasing, but paraphrasing is saying what you think they've said. Yeah. Now, Richard Bandler, one of the co-founders of NLP, he says paraphrasing is patronizing, because you're saying to the person, this is what I think you meant to say.
which you could see happening in that kind of the relationship environment you have in a teaching situation, can happen. Yeah. We all know times we've felt patronised in that environment as a student, as a kid. Yeah.
But the problem is that because words have a meaning beyond just the word, they have a neurological association. You know, if I say, oh, look at the sun's shining today, it's going to be a fantastic day, and you say, oh, sun's out, looks like we're going to have a nice day, that's not the same. Because one of my keywords there was fantastic, so you miss that out, and it's like, and I'll go, oh yeah, okay. Or I might go, no, it's going to be a fantastic day, right? That's a really short example.
So reflective listening, you've got to use the words.
Yeah, and you don't have to use every word, because people will go, oh, I just sound like a parrot. Well, you use the words that they put emphasis on, and it takes practice. I mean, I'm not saying this is really easy.
Yeah.
And if people talk for 5 minutes, then you're going to have to pick out the bits that are the most important, you know, to say back to them. But the idea is that when you're listening to somebody, it's kind of like you're putting their shoes on and seeing things from their point of view, hearing things, you know, in their wavelength, and then feeling what that feels like, and then respond. But what happens is somebody starts talking, the other one interrupts with, no, but, and away it goes, you know. So that listening and then trying to find some ways to resolve the conflict. And sometimes it's like really simple, like apologising. You know, I'm really sorry, I didn't realise I interpreted it that way. You know, what can we do now to go forward? And then setting in place some steps so that you and the other person or persons can move forward in a positive way. And how can we stop conflicts happening again in the future? You know, well, you can't stop them happening, but how do we get it so they're not, you know, like completely involving everybody and really explosive? How can we resolve them when they're just little things?
Yeah.
You know, because often people go, oh, I'll just let it go, it's not worth it.
So if there's two people, if you're just having to approach something where there's potential for conflict with someone, and let's not put it in our marriage relationship or something that close, but just everyday life.
Yeah.
Like, what's some advice then? How can we go about that?
First thing is think about how you perceive conflict.
Okay, right. Your big picture thought there.
Yeah.
Not even the issue itself.
Yeah, because you're not going to do anything about it. If you're in your mind, you've got horrendous pictures, you're just going to avoid it because you're going to be traumatised. Right? So thinking about it as I say, I always think about it as a way to solve a problem. So it doesn't scare me, you know. It's like, ooh, conflict, okay, let's sort it out. The next thing then is to question your own thinking. So if you're thinking something negative about a person, like let's say, oh, I think they're talking about me behind my back, for example.
Yeah.
Then I'd go, okay, how do I know they're talking about me behind my back? And let's say I go, oh, well, this is my own mind. Let's say I go, oh, well, I saw them behind, you know, in the cafeteria or in the lunchroom, and when I went in, they stopped talking. Yeah. So then, again, I'd ask myself, okay, so how do I know that they were talking about me?
Yeah.
Because, and then my answer would be, well, I don't really, because they might have been talking about a friend of mine, or they might have been just finishing the conversation.
Yeah.
Or
actually, you know, that's a really good one. They might have been talking about someone I know, so that's why they stopped talking.
Yeah. Or they might have been talking about the boss.
I never thought about that before. Yeah, it might have just been a secret conversation that they didn't want anyone to know about.
Yeah, exactly. So there could be a lot of reasons for that, you know, and so then it's like, well, you know, and the other thing is, you know, there's this thing about whatever people think about you is none of your business anyway, because you can just worry yourself silly worrying about what other people think of you.
That when I first saw that concept, I must have been at the right time for me. It sort of blew my mind a little bit. And this was advice being given to sports stars in India, where they have effigies burned of, you know, the cricket team doesn't perform there, they burn effigies of the players. And so it was really important to get this idea across to those guys so they could perform.
Yeah.
And it was what other people think of you is none of your business. It was a real interesting spin on it.
Yeah.
And good advice.
Because otherwise all you're going to be doing is worrying about what everybody else thinks. Then there's no room to think for yourself.
Yeah, and it's a really important. I think it's really important to think of that as an end goal in itself. Like, how do you want to live? Do you want to spend all your time worrying about stuff that you can't verify and you've got no control over?
Yeah. Yeah. And then you end up being a people pleaser, so you're just trying to do things to please people, and they're like, why are they always trying to do this? Why don't they just behave normally, you know? And then again, you end up creating exactly what you're trying to avoid.
Yeah.
Because you're not really being yourself.
Yeah.
You're trying to be what everybody else wants you to be, and that could be different for each person.
Usually.
Yeah, so being authentically yourself is important. So the first thing is then thinking about how you think about conflict. The next thing then is questioning yourself, like, how do I know? So this is a technical term called mind reading, okay?
Yeah.
So if I go into that lunchroom, I hear people talking, and then I stop when I go in, and I go, oh, they're talking about me. That's me mind reading. I don't know that. So the question is, how do I know?
Yeah.
And then I go, oh, because I stopped talking when I walked in. Okay, so how do I know that they were talking about me? So then I'd be going, okay, well, I don't really know, do I? So that'd be the end of that, right?
Yes.
Now, if it happens several times, then it might be that you go, oh, you know, this is a bit weird, this is the third time it's happened. Then I might go, are you guys okay? Every time I come in the room, I just notice that you stop talking. So I'm not accusing them of anything. I'm just saying this is what I notice, that this is the third time I've walked in the room and when you've been talking and you've stopped when I've come in. You know, I'm just wondering what's going on there. So not blaming them for anything, just because that's the other thing we do is we blame other people without really knowing the context or, you know, I mean, people can talk about all sorts of things. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Yeah. And then it's like if there is an issue, then how do we resolve it? And so this takes a lot of skill, and most people haven't got the skill. I did do a conflict resolution course in Raglan for Chamber of Commerce, I think it was, a few years ago. And it was one of the best attended ones because I say most people have never been taught it.
Yeah.
What else can you do? So learn to listen. Learn reflective listening skills. And it's very simple because, you know, like you tell me something that you did over the weekend that you're happy to share and I'll give you an
example. What, that had conflict?
No, just that you're happy to share that happened over the weekend.
I drove to Hamilton. Is that enough? Went to see my daughter play soccer.
Okay.
It was a tense game.
Well, okay.
People were hurt on the field.
Oh, gee, okay.
The opposition was a little aggressive, we felt.
Okay, so I'll just stop you there.
Okay,
so,
I was wondering if I was deep enough.
No, that's good. So you're saying that you went to your daughter's soccer game in Hamilton and it got a bit tense and a bit aggressive at times?
Yes.
Right, okay. So what I did there was just use some of your words, like a tense, aggressive, Hamilton, your daughter.
Yeah.
Okay? So there was about, I don't know, four or five sentences there. So this is the key. So if you... trying to resolve something with somebody, it's really useful to have the person, each other rather, just talk for a couple of sentences. Then I would reflect back what you've said.
Yeah.
And then and then ask you to carry on. So the idea is that you feel completely, if it is a conflict, that you feel completely heard. Now, when you feel completely heard, do you think that it would be easier for you to hear what I've got to say?
If you don't have that sense of urgency that you want to get something across.
Right.
Yeah.
If you've got everything that you want to get across, if you've got all that across and the person's reflected it back to you, so in order for me to reflect it back to you, I have to understand it, right? So I'll reflect it back to you. That tells you that I've understood it. Then you tell me some more. I'll reflect that back. That tells you that you've understood that. So it might be 10 minutes before you've got everything out that you want to say, depending on how long the conflict's been going, because sometimes it's years. And then you go, okay. And so then if I was, say, mediating, I'd say to the other person, okay, how do you want to respond now? And then the other person has to reflect the second person.
So if it's a situation you don't have a mediator, it's just mediator, there's just you and another person, you might need to set them up for it as well and say, look, I want to try this conflict resolution thing I heard Stephanie talking about called reflection, and we've got a problem that I feel like we need to solve.
Well, this is a really good point, because reflective listening...
if they're all angry, then you might not get very far.
I think... So the reflective listening is something that is useful outside of conflict. So I always say to people, with reflective listening, practice it all the time. So, you know, your partner comes home from work. What sort of a day have you had? What sort of day have you had so far, Aaron?
I'm a bit tired because it's Monday morning.
Okay.
Yeah, nice day outside.
Okay. So you had a nice day inside, but you're a bit tired because it's Monday morning.
Yeah.
Okay. So that's just a simple example of it, reflective listening, you know. So it could be that each day that you talk to your partner and there's some aspect of it that you reflect back. You don't have to reflect back every word because it just gets annoying. But it's basically so that the person knows that they're understood. So then when there is a conflict, you already got the reflective listening part under your belt. You know what to do. If you only use it in conflict, it becomes negative because, you're doing that blinking reflective listening. Now, if you'd done that last week, we wouldn't have the problem now, you know. So it's kind of like learn reflective listening. Practice it. Just on a day-to-day basis.
You could try it with your kids. I reckon they'd be like astonished. They'd be like, this is new.
I know. Yeah. Kids absolutely love it, because one thing that I find with kids is that they always say the parents don't listen.
Yeah.
And because the parents are always saying the kids don't listen, but often the kids are not listening just to piss the parents off because the parents don't listen to them.
Yeah, yeah. It's that thing, if you don't feel heard, it's hard to listen yourself.
Yeah. Yeah. I think I've mentioned before about a couple I saw years ago, and they came to see me about their 16-year-old kids, 16-year-old twins they had.
Oh.
And they, I said, well, I don't see children. And they said, how are you going to solve it then? I said,
because
they had a problem with the kids.
Yeah.
And so I said, well, okay, tell me about you. And now they were okay, but they weren't getting on that well. So I said, well, you're going to learn reflective listening, and taught them reflective listening in the first session. And they agreed that they, because they didn't see each other that much, that they would go for a walk 3 times a week in Cornwall Park, which is close to where we lived, and have a talk and use reflective listening. So what the complaint about the kids was that they didn't listen and they were always leaving the bath towels on the floor and all this sort of stuff. Anyway, that next week they came and I said, how are you getting on? And they said, oh, we're getting on heaps better, and we've been talking, and, you know, breakfast, you know, he's not reading the paper, we're chatting and we're reflective listening. I said, good. I said, but when are you going to see the boys? I said, I told you I'm not seeing the boys. So I said, well, you know, they never listen. And I went, right. I said, so, you know, of course you always listen to them, don't you? And there was this deathly silence, you know. And they went, no. And I said, okay, that reflective listening that you've been practicing with each other, you're going to practice that with the boys this week.
Yeah.
And they went, oh, okay. Well, you're not going to see them. I went, no. And so off they went. They came back the next week. And I said, how are they going? And they go, oh, much better. So I had 3 sessions with the couple. I didn't see the boys at all.
Yeah.
And about 2 months later, the woman turned up while I was working in the garden one morning at the weekend, and she came in and she said, oh, hello. And I said, oh, hi, how are you going? She goes, good. She said, I just wanted to come and thank you for the work that you did with us. She says, when you said you wouldn't see the boys, she said, I couldn't believe how you're going to fix it. She says, but, you know, they're amazing, and they've turned around, and it's because we changed.
Yeah.
And it was like, well, that was fantastic. It was fantastic for her to just call in wherever she was going and just to give me that feedback.
Yeah, because you might not get that.
No.
Yeah.
No. And so all that they'd done was started listening to the kids.
Yeah. And you get...
And they'd stop dropping the towels on the floor, because it's like if they want to get back at the parents, how do they do it? They just pick the thing that annoys them the most.
Yeah, yeah. And it's really, it's pretty obvious what annoys your parents the most. It's not hard to work that out.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's, I like my kind of experience was the times when I was closest to my kids, like emotionally closest, was the times it was easiest to get them to go along with what we needed in the house, you know. It was
right.
And that reflective listening is
Getting
people closer. That's part of how you describe it.
And I think the other thing about the reflective listening is to say, to let people know what you appreciate, you know. So if one of your kids, or it doesn't have to be one of your kids, it could be your partner, does something for you, like let's say they wash up, wash the dishes without being yeah. told, or load the dishwasher or whatever, you know, a parent or you know, the partner might say, oh, thanks for washing up, or thanks for washing the dishes, right? Which is great. That's a thank you. But if you let them know what it actually means to you, that's more powerful. So you might say, thanks for washing up. It meant that, you know, I had an extra 15 minutes. I could sit down and put my feet up with a book and relax.
Yeah, it was a relief to see the kitchen cleaned and I didn't have to do it. Yeah.
And that, it's like, oh, okay, that means a lot more to the person. So you're reinforcing positive behaviour.
Do you think sometimes a thank you can just be a tick-boxing exercise?
Yeah, well, it can if you just say, oh, thanks for that, you know.
Yeah.
But if you can think through what it actually means to you and say that to the person, and then, you know, coming back to the conflict then, you can say to them, you know, when you use this washing up, when you said you were going to wash up yesterday and then you didn't, it meant that when I got up in the morning, I was faced with all these dirty dishes with encrusted, you know, dinner all over. I mean, it took me twice as long to wash up.
Yeah.
I felt really disappointed in that. So again, you're using
the
same.
Should have seen the way, you should have seen the way Stephanie was looking at me like I had just disappointed her.
No.
I was like, oh, I'm sorry. I wanted to apologise.
I didn't mean to do that.
You must be reliving a moment.
But it's the same formula as the first one when you're saying, you know, thank you for washing up. I really appreciate it because it gave me an extra 15 minutes to read my book before I went to bed or whatever, you know. It's the same structure as the other one when this person's done something that you don't like or that you feel there's a bit of a conflict with, when they said they were going to do something and they didn't, as an example.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then how did that impact on you emotionally, you know. So it's the same structure, just different words.
Yeah.
But if you get used to doing it with when the person does positive things and the reflective listening, I'm just thinking I've got an article on the website about conflict. I think it's this one actually.
Stephanie's grabbed her phone and now she's
grabbing my phone,
scrolling frantically.
It's called How to Handle Conflict Like a Hero, but Without the Blood and Guts on the Carpet.
Yeah.
And there's some examples in there. So I've actually got so if people go to insideyourmind.com, which is my website, and then just search for conflict, it'll be should be the first one that comes up. So there's an example of Jane. So Jane struggles to handle conflict. So she says, I get so mad I can't even speak. I literally bite my tongue and my lip to stop me from saying anything because I know if I don't, I'll blow my top and we'll have an almighty row. I hate handling conflict, but when I don't say anything, I get resentful and angry. See, that's the other thing. If you keep it inside, people get resentful and angry, and then when they do have an argument, everything comes out from the last 6 years, you know. And so so the first thing is the way Jane thinks about conflict and the way she represents it in her mind. And then as a result of that, she tries to avoid conflict. And then Jane doesn't have the skills to handle conflict anyway in a way that helps her be heard and understood. So then there's some stuff about conflict. And the other thing is if you avoid conflict, it doesn't go away. All that happens is you internalise it and start getting resentful and start adding things up like, oh, yeah, well, he was supposed to wash up yesterday and he didn't wash up. And then he said he was going to, bill me or whatever, and he didn't do that either. And then there's this and that hasn't been done. And so it starts to build up inside the person and they're not actually saying anything to the other person about it. They just get more and more and more wound up about things that aren't happening until there's kind of an explosion and then everything comes out. And then the other person is like, oh, my God, it's like a tsunami just hit them. They don't even know where to start to resolve it.
Can you handle that situation if you're the one surprised to be on the receiving end of that? Can you go, okay, I've got to get into resolution mode here. I'm doing hand movements too. illustrate my point. But can you do that? Can you go, I've got to get into this counselor?
Me personally?
Yeah.
Yeah, I can. Because
you've got the skills, but when you get suddenly confronted with something like that, it could be a little bit triggering anyway.
It could be. Oh, I haven't actually had it because I'm quite good at reading people, and if there's a bit of a conflict,
the road.
Then... yeah. Pardon?
And you cross the road.
No. Before it gets to there,
yeah.
You know, if there's something wrong, I'll say, you know, are you happy with what I've said? You're not looking too happy. Can you explain what you think I've said for a start off? Because it may be that they've misinterpreted something.
Yeah.
Or that I haven't said it properly, because, I mean, there's so many words in the English language, you can often get them confused. And then if they say, you know, I thought you meant blah, 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 I can go, oh, sorry, no, that's not what I meant. This is what I meant. And I can say what I did mean so that it doesn't get out of hand. So this is then about watching, you know, learning people's body language. And if you see, you know, we all know when somebody hasn't got something, but we just ignore it a lot of the time.
Yeah. Do you think people do know? Sometimes I feel like they don't.
I think they do.
You know.
Yeah, that's true. I think sometimes we get an insight, but we maybe brush it aside because we don't know what to do about it.
Well, that's the thing. And I was just reflecting on what I asked before while you were talking then, that if someone does come to you all exploding everywhere...
It's an image.
Yeah, I know. I regretted that. It's too late. Because you have the skills and you've been through many successful resolutions, that you probably don't feel as tense as maybe I would, where I'm thinking, okay, we're already at the worst moment,
right.
And there's nowhere to go from here.
Yeah,
you know, it's probably what's going on subconsciously for me at times like that.
Yeah,
I imagine.
I think you're right. So people have – they're kind of often at the end of the tether.
Yeah.
They think that there can't be a resolution because they can't think of a resolution. But often the resolution takes both people to come up with something. And often, you know, when – there's another part of the resolution is, you know, first of all, hearing each other and reflecting it back so that – both parties understand, and often that is enough because they go, yeah. God, I never realised that I'd done that, or I never realised you felt that way, and I'm so sorry. Or sometimes it's not. Sometimes you have to go further and go, okay, so how can we resolve this so that we both win? Because I said the other thing is that the fear is that you're going to lose and the other person's going to win.
Yeah.
And so I'll say to somebody, you know, like, okay, what do you want? What's the outcome that you want? And they'll say, well, I want A, B, and C. And so I'll say to the other person, okay, so you want A, B, and C? Yeah. And so to the other person, if you can, what do you want? And they go, I want X, Y, and Z. You go, okay. So you want X, Y, and Z, and they want A, B, and C. Is it okay if you both have what you need or both have what you want? Now, I've never had anybody say, no, I don't want them to have A, B, and C.
Yeah.
They don't want them to have A, B, and C if they can't have X, Y, and Z. But if they can have what their X, Y, and Z, then they're quite happy for people to have A, B, and C.
Yeah.
So then it's like, okay, this is the fun part, is what creative solutions can we come up with so that you can both have what you want?
Yeah, and that is, if you can do that, that's definitely the fun part. Yeah.
And so, you know, with all this other stuff cleared out of the way, then, you know, and we go, okay, so we just want to come up with wild and ridiculous ideas. It doesn't matter how ridiculous they are, just shout them out, because often the most ridiculous one will trigger a brilliant one.
Yeah.
You know, and we go, we want at least 20. Right.
Yeah.
And so as they kind of hopefully have loosened up a bit and realised that, you know, that often they want the same thing. This is the interesting part. Then they can come up with some creative solutions. And then we go, okay, which one's going to work best? Which one's going to work best for you? Which one's going to work best for you? Okay, could we incorporate both of those? And then try for a few weeks and see how it's going. And then get back together and see how things are working. But, you know, often I've found that people, you know, before you even get to that, they're apologising to each other, they're shaking hands, and they often become really good friends because they've gone through this process with each other and learned something about the other person that's actually real, not just their mind read.
Yeah, we don't visualize resolution when we think of conflict, in my experience, and that sort of.
No, it's conflict and not conflict resolution.
Yeah, and that inability to see anything out the other side of it, and combined with a sort of a zero sum game type of thinking that a lot of people in the culture have, where if I'm to win, someone else has to lose.
Yeah.
And I've had those discussions on the side of kids' sports games, where some parents are like, our kids have got to learn that it's a competitive world out there and they have to win. And I'm just like, this is terrible.
Yeah.
First of all, you're messing up the game. They're just here to have fun.
Yeah.
But second of all, it's a terrible lesson because the world is not like that. It's not a zero-sum game out there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I always think that, you know, there's not such thing really as competition. It's like, you know, each person will or each company will attract the right people for them, and there's room for us all to be who we are and attract people to us that will support our businesses.
Yeah, and using a game as an example, a game is a hugely contrived thing.
It's like, a game for a start.
Yeah,
off.
Yeah, you're only allowed inside this box.
Yeah,
and you've got to do this, and there's all these rules, and the real world's not like that.
Yeah,
much more flowing and amorphous. So yeah.
So, you know, those are some skills that people can learn. But you know, I mean, I could run another conflict resolution course in Raglan, I suppose. It was a few years ago now, probably 5 or 6 years ago, maybe a bit longer.
I mean, we talk about how there's been a lot more conflict than normal over the last few years, excuse me, you know, around COVID and a lot of potentially unresolved stuff. People might think it's quite topical at the moment, yeah. I've got no idea, I can't speak for anyone else, but I'm just guessing sort of, yeah.
Yeah, I think there are. So it's an ongoing process, and all of these skills that I've mentioned are kind of individual skills as well that can be used in any context of life, you know, whether it's relationships with partners, children, you know, because that reflective listening for children is brilliant, you know, because what it does is you're saying back to them what they've said, and then you say, well, what would you like to do about it? And they'll often tell you. Or in the process of reflective listening, they resolve it.
Yeah, and it's easier too with children because you know they haven't got any baggage.
Yeah.
They're going to bring up all the stuff from 20 years ago because they weren't around.
Yeah. So, you know, it's a good thing to practice it with children. You can say exactly what they say and they'll tell you some more. You know, and then you say, oh, like for example, let's say the kid comes home and goes, oh, got sent out of school today.
Yeah.
Or sent out the classroom. And the parent goes, what? What did you do? Blah, 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 you know. and then that shuts the kid down, you know, whereas if you just said, oh, you got sent out of classroom today. Well, that's interesting. Yeah, and it wasn't even my fault. Oh, so it wasn't even your fault. No, it was Jimmy next door. He threw something at the school teacher. Oh, so Jimmy threw something at the school teacher. Yeah, he threw, you know, a piece of chalk at the school teacher. Oh, okay. And the teacher thought it was me because he didn't own up to it. Oh, okay, so you got sent out instead of Jimmy because the teacher thought you'd done it. So the difference between that and what? And it took, what, a minute?
Yeah.
And it's all calm.
Yeah. Hey, folks, we've been talking to Stephanie Philp. It's time to wrap up the show. Inside Your Mind is the segment. And any of that stuff that where Stephanie mentioned, she wrote an article. Her website's also called Inside Your Mind.
Yeah.
I stole the title.
InsideYourMind.com.
I stole the title for our radio segment because I thought it was a good one.
InsideYourMind.com. And just search for conflict, and the article's called How to Handle Conflict Like a Hero But Without the Blood and Guts on the Carpet.
Yeah, that's always nice. Think of the carpet, folks. Think of the carpet. All right, Stephanie, thanks for coming in.
Okay, thanks, Aaron.
All right, yes, time for the end of the show. I'll be back again tomorrow morning.